kid is my uncle. He choked me to death.
Whenever anybody says they're a little concerned, they're very concerned.
So what's wrong with being sexy?
Hello, and welcome.
Stop licking me. That's the perfect place for the show to start.
Leg, and I'm like, stop licking my effing leg. Like, I worked out this morning. I'm in shorts.
And he's like, we're back,
he's
folks.
To lick my legs. Stop it. And he's OCD. He won't stop. And, like, you almost have to, like, punch him.
Oh, no.
For the listeners, so you don't punch dogs. I'm being hyperbolic.
Absolutely not.
unless
they deserve it, as Sean Connery said.
Yeah,
how else are you supposed to keep them in line? You got to smack them around every once in a while.
It's a little smack.
Well, he just got back from Baltimore. How'd your pilot for your boat license go, Ryan? How'd your pilot for your boat license go, your training?
Oh, you know, I got to tell you, the strange thing is, they will give anybody a license no matter what. And frankly, I had a couple drinks, say a 12-pack. I didn't know I was taking the test yesterday. Evidently I was, and I got to tell you, I think I did okay, but I don't remember a lot about it.
Nope, yeah.
Hey, Robbie, do they still have this question on the test? How many sea captains does it take to crash the Exxon Valdez?
One drunken one, I think, is the answer.
One and a fifth.
One and a fifth. There you go. Nice.
Actually, you know, that was a bunch of BS. That guy wasn't drunk. He was exonerated, but that's the story we get. It was the whole thing was the ship was faulty. It was the company's fault, but yeah, we all are under the impression that it was a drunk captain.
That is what is coming out of
stand
so far.
At the beginning of this show, we are not going to bash companies. Companies are people, according to Citizens
right,
United.
They're people.
And we don't bash people on this show. Except that
you know, that's a slippery slope, though, too, Rob. I mean, we need corporations to be people so that we can sue them, but we don't need them to be people so that they can, like, have a political voice. You know what
right,
I mean?
If
there's a, yeah, there's a line in there somewhere.
Yeah. I just want to know.
There's a thin line.
I just want to know when.
Oh, there is. There
I just
want to
know when does
is.
business life begin? Does it begin at. I need to know
it
when the embryo stage.
Whenever they can pay politicians money.
Is it when you're, yeah, is it when your first bribe goes out? Is it the creation of your LLC?
It. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Absolutely. I think if you ask out the folks in Alabama, I think it's whenever you first have the idea to have the business is when it's.
That's right. What I was thinking. Right. Like, it's just the idea. That's all I need now to give life to my company.
Well, as we all know,
a Facebook page.
It
maybe.
Actually, the actual answer is business life begins when God wills it into existence billions of years ago.
Yes.
And it finally comes to fruition.
By the way,
in Alabama.
He's been talking to me about a Bitcoin scam that he wants me to pull. And, I mean, it's his idea, so I can't be faulted for it, you know?
Speaking of which, if you guys got access to a volcano, we could make some money.
Hey. By the way.
I got a volcano. It's, I mean, like, it has a perfect bowl. You can make balloons with it to inhale.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Hey, speaking of great ideas, is that where I'm going?
I don't know.
Sure.
Are
where
you?
I'm going. Hey, good news, though. I got a new project, finally. Got a producer and writer attached to a new project of mine, a guy named Dan Schneider. Apparently, he's this guy's been around. And
Eastwood?
He was like, "Man, nobody's been wanting to work with me lately." And I was like,
"Please
That's
tell me
weird.
This isn't a kid show."
And yeah, oddly enough, yeah, it's a kid show. It's for kids. It's for youngsters. A lot of feet stuff involved, which I was like, "This guy's a real Tarantino head." I guess he's like, it's kind of weird. But anyway, big opportunity for me. As a writer, this guy's hired me on.
Can I have a sidebar?
He's got a new pilot.
Can I have a sidebar real quick?
You can.
We need to get away from this show real quick. Like, tell him your phone doesn't work. I'm going to say,
dude, I was already gone.
I'll be honest with you. I was like, who is this guy? This guy didn't have any credit. I looked it up. He was in Head of the Class. Remember the dumpy guy from Head of the Class? It's him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's that guy.
Yeah, and his buddy, you know the guy on the show who's too cool for school, and they're actually friends in the show?
Yeah.
That guy went on to produce a bunch of stuff with him until, strangely, one year he just left. And supposedly he's had nothing to do with this guy ever since.
Well, that's weird.
Supposedly.
Hopefully that won't happen.
Kind of strange.
He seems like a fun guy. He's
He's
always talking about writing exercises we should do. And I'm always like, these are a little strange. But he's like, trust me, man. I've been around the biz for a while. This is how you do things. And I'm like, I'm not comfortable calling myself these names. But
have you heard his... He has a surefire way to save money for the show. I don't know if you guys know this.
Yeah.
What you do is you hire two women and make them split a salary.
Well, that's what happened.
You pay the men full salary.
That's what I was
that's
happy.
That's how you can save money.
That's how I was so excited. He hired me on, fresh new face in the team. I'm getting full salary. There's a couple chicks on there. Apparently, they're just getting half, and he also belittles them all the time, which is fun. Fun games in the office, you know, Sean Connery-esque.
You want to know when we should have known Dan Schneider was going to be a complete creepazoid?
When we heard his name was Dan Schneider?
No, when you watched Better Off Dead and he was Ricky.
Yes, my lovely wife brought up the fact that he was in Better Off Dead because they had to learn the unwritten language of love. Is that right? Something like that? I don't know. Oh, is everybody there? Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Language of love. Sorry, I was trying to get my dog to leave me alone.
Oh, is he still? He's
language of love.
You got to stop putting peanut butter on it, Robbie.
Oh my God! And by the way, if you remember, Ricky was a stalker. He didn't know how to take no for an answer. He constantly invaded Monique's physical space.
Really?
I mean, it was all right there. I don't think Dan Schneider was acting. They just said, dude, how would you treat a beautiful girl who's not interested in you?
I'm surprised they haven't brought that up on that doc there. They've got about it. If that's the case, that was withheld information. Well, let's get to it, guys. I would love to talk about Ariana Grande trying to get juice out of a potato and how
or laying on a bed and having a upside down water shot all over her face.
Yeah. Or a kid dressed up as a giant penis nose, calling it a nose even though it's clearly a penis, sneezing on a woman's face and. By the way, joke aside, if you haven't seen that doc, it's pretty insane. I've watched the first
two episodes.
I've watched the first two, and I'm like, why am I? There's points where I'm like, why am I watching this? This is just upsetting.
Can I just say one last thing?
And you know, the whole time he's unironically saying, you know, what's wrong with being sexy?
That's right.
Here's my favorite part of it. And I'm getting ready to be a jerk. J-E-R-K.
Uh-oh.
I love these parents that they show, and when they see there's problems, their answer is, I didn't want to be a problem, or I didn't want to ruin my kid's career. Okay.
Yeah, well, I think that's also a system that's kind of bred with kid actors, is the parents are relying upon them for their bread and butter.
I'm a big fan of him, but there's a Tosh.0 thing where he does this whole bit, and it's basically, you know, parents in there with babies, you know, and it's, you know, the most outrageous Anthony Jeselnik type of things that he's asking them to do, and they're like, oh yeah, sure, that's,
well,
you know,
that's,
it's,
that's
like,
that's,
you know, nobody in their right mind should ever agree to something
like
that.
It's not Borat.
We're gonna
it's
have
the,
your baby hold a bottle of acid.
Is it Bruno?
Yeah, right.
For a few seconds. Oh, she can do that.
Is it Bruno where Sacha Baron Cohen does the same thing? He sets up a Hollywood, like, audition. And he has,
I think you're right.
And he's like, okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to have this little baby Hitler, and then there's going to be other babies in his wheelbarrows, and we're going to be dumping them into a fire. And they were fine with it. They were like, yeah, I mean, whatever we need to do. And like, he was like, so your girl's really cute, but she could lose about 8 pounds. Could you do that by next Tuesday? And they'd be like, yeah, we can. She can lose. Like, I'm talking like, you know, a 60-pound girl. Like, there's nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And the parents were just like, sure. Yeah, that's no problem. She can do that. So it's really disgusting.
Right.
Really disgusting. Speaking of disgusting, not really. I had fun watching it. Let's get to what everybody's talking about right now.
That's, Northern Exposure.
That's the road where the house meets the road.
Roadhouse.
Talking about
Roadhouse. You know, that's what's bad is, you know, my kid has never seen either one of these movies, but he thinks that joke is absolutely hilarious.
Well, Peter Griffin did make it a pretty good joke.
Well, yeah. But, you know, when something has, you know, like you don't have to actually have seen it, you know, to think it's humorous. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, that's a funny thing. I don't need to watch that. I can tell jokes about it.
No,
I'm not a
Peter
fan.
Peter becomes obsessed with it.
I'm not a Family Guy fan.
He just
fan.
Goes around saying it and kicking people.
I just faintly remember that.
Yeah, there's nothing particularly that funny about it. It's just, you know, that one word is good. Other than that, the rest of it's awful. Yeah.
Oh, no, I had no idea. No, the old Roadhouse, here's my take. I'll just come out the gate hot with my take. I'll let you guys do your takes. I think I told you guys this already. Jake Gyllenhaal was in a blockbuster movie. He sold it. He's like Reacher 2.0 on the big screen. Everybody else was in a B to C movie around him. And if you could just take him, if you could like cut him out and put him with better actors, it would have been a really fun movie. I also am really upset. I don't know why Doug Liman is using CGI in the fights. The CGI in the fights just looks weird. It's really distracting. Secondly, he would love it. I mean, God, he's trying so hard during some of these fights to emulate the Indonesian Korean action movies that I love.
You know what? I don't even know the movies as well as you, and I saw it.
And it's weird to me that you already have a fight style built into your movie, UFC, but which, you know, we all know is boring. Sorry, if you're a UFC fan. If you want to watch two guys roll around in their underwear, come to my house on a Thursday night. Pay me to see that.
$5 a head.
It's
a two-drink minimum. It's not a
like,
cover, but
it's
you
either
know.
Like the most unbelievably exciting knockout, or it's just the slowest drag fest of watching two guys roll around on the floor. Ladies.
Yeah.
Not a fan. Haven't been a fan for long. Anyway, you already have that style built in. Instead of using that style, he's trying to make an Indonesian like fighting movie, but he's ramping frames. He's ramping speed. He's not ramping speed. Actually, he's frame cutting, which is totally different than ramping speeds while you're filming. He's actually frame cutting and then CGIing punches in. It's really weird. It was really distracting. Like I said, Gyllenhaal, great. I thought he sold it. The bad guy that was the comedic relief also was good. My main thing was just like, why isn't this cast better? Did they spend all their money somewhere and then couldn't get anybody else? It was just a weird...
It wasn't on the soundtrack.
Weird cast, that's for sure. And what's up with... this was an early Roadhouse had this problem. I have played in a mini band, many crap holes, many nice places. Bands do not keep playing when a fight breaks
That's right. When the fight starts, we stop. I hide behind my equipment,
and I back up because I do. What I don't do is like, oh, the whole place is fighting. Let's just jam out this song.
Right. That'll make this better.
It's so stupid.
Yeah.
All right. So that's pretty much my take. CGI. I will say this. I liked a lot of elements of the script. It was just so poorly executed. And they had scenes that probably popped on the page, like the guy shaving on the boat. It just didn't work on the screen.
Okay.
That's my take.
That's me.
Some of the stuff was forced, keeping him there. Like, what's his motivation to stay here? You know, the little girl and her dad thing, that felt a little forced, you know, into the story. It's like we gotta, you know, what's his motivation? You know, exactly. So many villains. None of them were great villains. As much as I was in the mood, though, to dislike things yesterday, generally when I was watching this, I didn't hate it.
I
generally agree with your assessment. You know, I thought the story was overall pretty good. The acting, you know, other than Gyllenhaal, was not great. But I tell you what stood out to me and what I really liked. There was a great product placement deal with Fender. And here's the thing, though. I mean, think about who the demographic for this movie is. You know, it's teenage boys, right? Action movie, you know, type thing.
Yeah, UFC.
So,
Wait, are you insulting us because we all rushed to see it?
No.
I think it's middle-aged exers watching it.
Well, that's why they threw the Gretsch White Falcon in there. Of course, Gretsch being owned by Fender. But everything else was the new product line. It was like the new American Performer Strat, the new AVRI, you know, 52 reissue Tele.
Really?
That's cool. This stuff is like, you know, you're putting that out there in the context that, you know, playing guitar is cool. Mm-hmm. And that's what hooks so many kids to get into it. So I thought for a lot of reasons, I really liked that. You know what I mean? It's corporate shilling and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? If some kid picks up the guitar because he saw this movie and thought that that was cool, then great. I'm 100% in favor of it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I noticed that, not to the extent you noticed. I didn't know what they were, but I did notice a lot of Fenders being played.
Every instrument, every guitar on that stage was a Fender throughout the whole movie. I never saw anything that wasn't owned by Fender Musical Instruments Corporation.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Robbie, what's your hot take?
Okay, so here's the thing.
On the Roadhouse.
Let's start from the beginning. I love the original Roadhouse.
Okay, yes, me too.
The original.
It's not a good movie, but it's
really.
No,
thought you'd be taller.
The other night, I had I had Sam watch it, and she had never seen it, and she laughed several times when it ended. And I said, "What do you think?" She goes, "It's a terrible movie, but I had a lot of fun watching it." And I was like, "There we go. That's all I wanted." Okay,
yeah. It's stupid. So, it doesn't make
plus
sense.
Plus, it's got Bigfoot in it, man.
So many holes.
So I end up, you know, like wanting to love and hate this movie at the same time.
Hey, mijo.
Sorry.
So I finally start watching it, and one, I'm shocked how much there's whole chunks of it I enjoy greatly.
Sorry, what did you say, Rob? I missed that. I was hacking up something. What did you say?
I heard you, Sam. Whole chunks of the movie I enjoyed.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and it's usually moments when Gyllenhaal is actually getting to act.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, he's comedic when he needs to be. Mm-hmm. He's serious when he needs to be. And when he becomes menacing, he becomes menacing. Like, I was like, oh, boy.
Yeah, he can go dark. Yeah, that's what I like about Jake. He can be, like, the really happy, like, hey, I could... This guy's just a nice dude, or he can be like, uh-oh, something wrong with this guy.
Yeah, and then the dude who, from the beginning, is funny, is great. Every scene, that guy's
broken arm guy.
Stuff.
Yeah, the broken arm guy.
Arm guy.
More stuff.
He really
this
did.
This dude understood the assignment. Mm-hmm. He understood the assignment.
He was like, yeah, because they had the problem of, real fast, they had the problem of every bad guy is so over the top and unbelievable you're just like, oh, boy, they're too laughable. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. So then, think of the bad guy in the original, Ben Gazzara,
yes, that's right, Ben Gazzara.
He was creepy. He
from
was
Scarface.
Scary. The dude was a sociopath.
He's a good villain.
Yeah,
I bought it from the beginning. He was a sociopath. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the scene of him singing Life Would Be a Dream, Sweetheart, swerving across the road, and runs Dalton off the road, and just, he's crazy.
I like when he says, turn that beep off! I can't listen to that beep. It's got no soul.
Yeah. So then, that's one of the first times we really see that guy in the movie, Ben, is when he's driving the car. The shaving scene was so stupid.
So stupid.
All I wanted to do was slit the guy's throat. I was like, can we kill him off and get rid of him right off the bat?
Yeah.
Well, Do you make your, you know, is your villain a sociopath, or is he motivated by money and he's a smart, savvy villain?
Yeah,
which is
And they kind of made him not a completely bad guy. He wanted to bring in a giant resort, which would bring tons of money to that area and employ a bunch of people. Now, I'm not for corporations and things like this, but I didn't see the bad guy motivation there. That's it?
Yeah.
I mean, right. The dude, yeah, the original, I mean, he was... wants to be a tyrant fascist, mm-hmm, running the entire area and will kill people who don't follow and his lead instantly. And it's literally,
a couple times, my wife and I were like, wouldn't you just, how committed are you to the guy, your uncle or whatever the hell? Wouldn't you just take the money and reopen a place somewhere else?
See, that right there, that was my whole thing. It was like, okay, so why? First of all, I have to suspend my belief on this issue, which is,
yeah,
woman inherits bar in the Keys and doesn't immediately sell it for $50 million and do whatever she wants with her life.
Exactly.
Right?
And can I add?
None of us would keep that bar.
The first time I ever saw her, she was on The Daily Show. She was a correspondent. She was great.
Oh, okay.
I've seen her in some other stuff, and she is solid. Mm-hmm. She was terrible in this. Like, I was just like
they didn't really have much for her to do, though, either. You know what I mean?
Well, how about the scene where it's clear she's lying to him about stuff? And it's like, it was so obvious. So then I thought, okay, so we're going to find out she's actually smuggling drugs. She's bad, too.
Yeah, she's bad.
And Jake's going to have to deal with it. I thought that would have been a great twist. Yeah. And then I find out, no. She just wants to hold on to this because she loves her uncle. And I'm with you guys, like, that's it?
That's it? Yeah. Your uncle would want you to be happy, I think. You sell that sucker. Yeah. Open up a new bar if that's what you want to do. Somewhere where there aren't a bunch of psychos.
Absolutely. How about this? They build a $50 million resort. You get paid for it. And you get licensed to put your bar in the resort to make shit tons of money.
That's my version. Like, my version of Roadhouse is like a. It just turns into a Michael Mann.
Any place.
Michael Mann, a bunch of meetings and like negotiations and lawyer rooms.
Yeah.
Or that there's any place in the Keys that is not completely overrun by minivan driving tourists. And you know what I mean? It's like there's some place that's so outlaw in the Keys. Really?
Yeah.
No.
That was my other thing. I was like, one, this place seems to be really tiny, but yet this bar is packed every night. Or those can't be townies, because the townies would know, like, don't go to that place. It's the worst.
Yeah.
Go to wherever that hospital is.
Like, he says when he comes to get Patrick Swayze, he's like, used to be pretty nice. Now it's the kind of place they sweep up eyeballs after it closes.
Yeah.
So nobody good wants to come there.
No.
Well, it's like, and all you got to do is send them the Everglades, and it all of a sudden becomes way more believable. You know what I mean?
Right.
Move it 60 miles north.
You're going to be my Saturday night. My every Saturday night
now,
thing.
So we
put
now
it,
have
put it
a
where
villain.
Porky's was. Put it in Angel Beach, Florida.
We have a villain who's not
Let's
a villain.
Let's reboot Porky's, guys. What
oh,
is,
God, don't
say Porky's
in this,
been
in this day and age,
we can make it. But boy, we'll reverse the gender. It'll be fine.
Well, hey, there's clever, a there's a community where they pull a reverse Porky's.
I'll make them, non-binary. It'll be fine.
Okay, so then we have this looming dad in prison who seems like a real bad guy, but he just doesn't exist. He's worse than Bosley. At least Bosley, or not Bosley, Charlie calls in at the end of every episode. You know, so we know
you gotta shadow the monster a little bit, don't you? You know what I mean? Like showing, having somebody killed in prison or something.
Show the back of his head on a payphone. Yeah. Show his hand holding a payphone.
Right,
Then, and this, to me, this is where it completely falls apart, and it's too much. I tried, but I couldn't. Conor McGregor was the worst effing choice they could put in this movie.
So bad.
Because here's how they should have done it. He shouldn't have said very many lines at all, and when he did, it should have been psychotic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like you could have him jumping out of that place, buck naked, walking through the streets of Italy. You still could have done it.
You're right. If you just cut his dialogue, that's what I would have. As a director, if I couldn't get a performance out of someone, I'm like, all right, well, they can't talk.
Just the way he looks and his presence with a few words would have been enough to be terrifying.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't think about that, but you're totally right.
Terrifying. Instead, they make him a complete buffoon from the beginning. Like, I do not.
Well, he is, though, and so it's fitting.
I don't think
he's
going to be a challenge for Dalton. We had a guy who literally tells Patrick Swayze,
that he used to F guys
like
you
in prison. I used to F guys like you in prison. And when he says it, you're looking at him going, yeah, he's done that.
Especially with that haircut, that tight necklace.
He didn't need to say any lines. The guy had, what, 30 lines in the entire original movie?
Oh, and I don't think that. I think he talked two or three times.
But the end, you got to admit, though, Rob, the intro is pretty funny when he comes out of there with his junk hanging like a bat, you know, sleeping through an earthquake.
Junk hanging like a bat, sleeping through an earthquake, yes. But my point is, then, by the end, like, I'm sitting there, and there was no great... Like, the way they had to get to that fight scene was so terrible.
Yeah.
And what about the submerged underwater for 4 miles, going 60 on a boat, is the stupidest thing ever. Shark taught me how to water ski on my parents' boat. That is a fact.
I could do it while smoking a cigarette.
I have been dragged, and Shark, one time, I just remember Shark telling me, if it's not going well, let go.
It's like you've seen that John Candy movie, right? Let go of the rope. Let go of the rope.
That is it. If it's not going well, let go. And Shark trying to pull me at 25 miles an hour to get me up was not good. I was drowning. I let go finally.
You can see the water coming up over somebody's face, and it's like you just see green, and like you see them holding their breath.
All I could think of the entire time was a Bugs Bunny movie or a Bugs Bunny cartoon. Yeah. Like, I felt like I was watching a Bugs Bunny cartoon every time Conor McGregor got on the screen.
You're right.
It's like the skis are supposed to be in front of you, Robbie.
And you're right. He should be a pretty intimidating guy. Like,
he could have been terrifying.
Now, here's my question. Oh, you know what I was going to say before I get to this? I liked a couple elements of the script where they were subverting very tired old scenes.
Give me an example.
Okay. Him at the railroad track. How many times have you seen that scene in a movie? And the conclusion is either they finally get the car started right at the last minute and last second, and they drive off.
Okay, now I know what you're talking about.
Secondly, the car won't start. They have to get out of the car, run, jump off the track as the train hits it, pulls it down the track. That's the other way. Third way, they die. I've never seen it where he thinks he's going to make it, and they just go ahead and hit him, and he's okay.
Yeah.
I like that.
He thinks he wants to kill himself, realizes, I don't want to do that.
No, maybe
and
not.
And almost gets away with it. Yes, that's right.
And then it goes ahead and nails him, and, like, not fully, but it hits him and just scoots him around, and he's just sitting in a beat-up car. I was like, that's good. I like the crocodile. Are there saltwater crocodiles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I figured there were. I didn't think there was that much talk with
that. It'd be an alligator, but yeah.
That's what I thought.
Thinking, are these gators or crocodiles?
They keep saying crocodile. An alligator. But it's an alligator,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but it'd have to be an alligator, yeah. Yeah. And again, another reason why this would make a lot more sense set in the Everglades than the Keys. But yeah, there are still alligators down there. There's freshwater in the Keys.
But yeah, I like that. I like the whole alligator bit.
And we didn't have to see a dog die on screen. We just referenced it happened.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, I was happy about that. Real happy.
Great dog.
Well, I really like that whole fourth wall-ish, is this a Western thing? You know what I mean? That, you know, conversation between him and the girl that kind of went on throughout the movie. I thought that was good.
And I love that Eastwood called it out, like, was immediately like, this is BS, it won't add up. And then they answered it. It's like, okay, we have to do this, which... If I can piggyback off that, did I miss it? Why does he get so mad and kill his friend?
I don't know. I never caught that.
I kept waiting for us to find out had an affair with his wife or something.
I think he's hitting him, and the ref comes between them, and he gives him like a cheap shot, I think, something like that. It's not much.
Yeah, but he says when he finally snaps...
Mm-hmm. The best I got out of it, Robbie, was
no
like
stopping him or something. And I'm like, but why did you snap? I don't understand. Well,
there's that one part where his buddy was like getting the better of him at one point in that. That's all I took from it. Like, he thought his buddy had gone too far or whatever.
Really think like he popped him one extra time in the face and he just kind of flipped.
I didn't think that was good enough motivation.
No, not
I think
really.
They could have wrote one more line into it that said, you know, he stole my wife.
Something.
You know what I mean?
You know what they could have said? They could have said something like, when a man puts a gun in your face, you got two choices.
You can die or kill the mother.
I know we're making fun of it, but at least that made sense.
You didn't know.
She
didn't tell you.
I do love the fact that he tells him to let it go. He says, "Are you still holding on to that blank? Hell, you gotta let that go, mijo." Like, he killed a guy. Maybe he shouldn't let it go, mijo. Maybe he should feel bad about it.
You can't feel bad about it. She didn't tell you she was married.
But yeah, you're right. At least it's something. His arc in this movie, Dalton's arc in this movie was, I'm a nice guy. I did something bad, but now I'm just, you know what? I'm going to try to be a nice, balanced guy. It haunts me a little bit, but I'm not going to do that again because I know if I get too mad, I'll do it. Uh-oh, I'm too mad. Let's do it. That's pretty much it.
And let's be honest. I can get so mad, I'll kill my best friend.
Yeah, that's how mad I can get.
You know, like, I think all three of us have been mad at each other at some point in all the decades we've known each other. Never once did it occur to me and be like, you know, I ought to kill Frisch.
No.
You've been mad at me? What'd I do?
Yeah, what are you mad at me?
You know what
I've never
I
been
mean.
Mad at you.
What'd I do to you, man?
CGI truck scene really upset me. That scene, God, it's bad.
Absolutely.
Post Malone,
CGI
also.
One thing I totally had to ask you, Eastwood, I've been chomping at the bit to ask you this, okay? And it's a serious question. I'm not even being a douchebag. You have gotten so sick of the...
when you have to tell people that you're not being a douchebag.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like when somebody says to you, like, can I be honest with you? You're like, what have you not been honest?
Yeah, right. Yeah, look, let me be straight with you on this one.
Well, you know, usually when I tee something up like this, I ask the most stupid, ridiculous question possible.
I have
a literal question that's been on my mind since I watched
it. I doubt it. Go ahead. That it's stupid. So, I doubt it's stupid.
So, Eastwood, I know I never call it the right thing because when I call it, you politely correct me without calling me out. But it's the wolf and cub. What is it? What do you call it? Like
Lone wolf and cub.
Lone wolf and cub. So we find out that in the original Roadhouse, it turns into that story. The lone wolf shows up to help the cub, and then, you know, it goes down from there.
Okay.
This story never has the lone wolf come. He's on his own the entire time.
Oh, I get
that. You like that change in it?
Well, no. I mean, Lone Wolf and Cub is that archetype is I have been not burdened, but I have found myself with this child, and I have two choices. Either I'm going to take this child and it will become, I will protect it at all costs, or I can leave this child to other hands. So it doesn't have any of that because, everybody already has their upper familiar, if that makes any sense.
Their what?
Their upper, like, they have their parental person, or they have, you know, the book girl has a nice father. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, there's no one there to save. And, there's no one with him. I'm fine with that.
That's what I was curious about. Did you like they took that out?
There is
no one who trained him. There's no one going to come in and help
him. Yeah, I said, this is his origin. He just comes in with trauma, basically, is what it is. And, like, I was like, this is Dalton's origin. I want a sequel.
Giving us so many options for a sequel.
Yeah. Now, here's my big question, though. Like I said, if they would have just cut a few stupid things, guy getting shaved, couple intros. You know, when you write a script, you really want your intros and those kind of things to really pop, you know? And like I said, I think some of those things on the page probably read great, but the execution of it just didn't work with the actors and the directors and all of it.
Yeah, I didn't like this until the first fight scene. That's when the movie got interesting to me. Yeah. Before that, it was like, I don't like this.
Our boy Post Malone's in there throwing some CGI punches. So here's my question. Who should have been – there's so many bad guys. You got the blonde-haired bad guy. You got Big Dick, the sheriff. We haven't even talked about him. You have Conor McGregor and then the guy in jail that you don't see. Then you have the first main bad guy who dies by the alligator. So that's four bad guys that we have. Right. Not mentioning.
Well,
the one
plus
in jail.
you've got the ones who burned down the place. That guy gets singled out as a particular bad guy.
He keeps
getting screen time. Like he's number two in that.
Yeah,
game.
Right.
Yeah.
So here's
but
my.
But he's not really otherwise that important, you know.
Right.
I would have scratched the whole father in prison thing, and I would have made the bad guy the old guy. I would have cast Eric Roberts as
Seriously, nice.
As the bad guy who's not, he's like Shark said, he's not a killer, he's a brain killer. Like, he is a smart dude who's being stopped. He's all about business, and if he has to kill somebody, that's whatever it takes. He's a Michael
Burton. Yeah, whatever it takes to make the money.
So you get Eric Roberts, he'd be happy to do it. I know Tom Hardy is not going to make a movie like this, but imagine Tom Hardy in Conor McGregor's role. He doesn't say anything. He's just an enforcer. Yep. He's like, he gets a phone call.
Ooh.
He says, like, sure thing. Hangs up. That's it.
Dave Bautista.
Bautista could be in here somewhere. Sure. I'll buy Bautista.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
As a tough guy.
By the way, that shaving scene, I think, could have been fixed real easy. Take it down being over the top.
Yeah.
Keep having him shave you. And finally, at the end, when he nicks you, stand up and act like it's okay and then kill him right there on the boat.
That's it. Throwing the captain overboard doesn't make you that bad.
This dude is insane. This dude is insane.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
Instead, he goes upstairs and punches the captain of the boat.
Yeah.
When the ocean is stupid. Yeah.
Just imagine that he's. So imagine.
I mean, even in the Untouchables, he kills the guy with a baseball bat at the dinner table. That's true. What I mean? It's like you got to have that outrageous act to show how.
Just take that out completely, and just have a little nick. Eric Roberts grabs that razor, puts it to him, and just says, "If you cut me again, I'll kill everybody in your family."
Right. And give him
back the razor. That's power.
Yes.
Right. You know what? There you go. It's up to you now. Do you want everyone in your family to die? Like, I would make it a little more elaborate than that. I would go into their dogs and their daughters and everything else.
Absolutely. It would be like a Clint
Full Kaiser, so say.
Yeah.
He says, you know, I'm going to come back. I'll kill every dog in this town. Yeah, exactly.
I'll burn down their house.
Kill your dog.
I'll kill your dog.
Right. Yeah.
Kill your dog, too.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's just, here's where I think the real problem for me is. The movie couldn't decide, are we going to be an over-the-top, goofy look at this, or are we going to be a serious action drama, serious in quotations, action drama that's going to play things out with mild amounts of humor to lighten up the darkness.
And when it was
And it
goofy,
tried to be two things at once.
When it was goofy, I thought it was way more fun.
I did too. Broken Arm Guy was my favorite part of the whole movie. Broken Arm Guy made the movie for me.
Before you saw it, Eastwood and I were texting about it because we didn't want to ruin anything for you. And Eastwood said, he said to Gyllenhaal. Gyllenhaal's in an A-list movie and everybody's on. And I said, except the comic relief. That dude was money. And he was perfect. You're right. He was. He was. Oh, last thing I want to say about it, and then we can move on.
How about Danny Masters?
You know how when you talk about someone chewing up scenery?
That'd be chilling.
Every time I've heard you talk about chewing up scenery, it always seems like a compliment.
Oh, no.
Maybe I've misread that.
No.
Okay, because I saw... Because usually when we talk about it, it sounds like you're being complimentary, and the performance is usually pretty good. I kept seeing people say Conor McGregor is chewing up scenery every time he's on the screen.
Yeah, in a bad way. He's being so big and stupid with his take on it. Yeah, she's chewing up the scenery. He's
Can chewing on scenery be good? Like when
we've had this debate. Right, we've had this whole debate.
If your movie requires it, yeah. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah.
Like, and if your movie requires chewing up scenery.
And Robbie, to your point, I think it originally was meant exactly the way Eastwood describes the way it's meant, you know what I mean? Or the way they're using it against Conor McGregor. But I think it's one of those things like the word irregardless or something like that where it's gotten used the other way in a positive connotation. So, you see people throw that out there without real regard to, you know, which way it's going. You know what I mean? I think it's one of those things that gets pasted onto whatever. Yeah. But I think Eastwood's correct in that generally it's, you know, it's like the term quid pro quo. That doesn't mean anything bad, but it's only used in a negative connotation.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. That helps me a lot. Because when I saw that, I'm like, no, he was awful. No.
Right.
And I had an idea that it could be bad, but it seems like a lot of times when we've talked about it, we're talking about Pacino being over the top, but it kind of works.
Yeah.
or something honestly, like that. You know
I
what
think
I mean?
It's from like Stage Days. And it's like literally like the idea of someone so into the stage play that they're like chewing on the backdrop. Like that's how actorly they're being. They're like taking paintings off the wall and like biting with rage.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's where it comes from. I'm not positive.
No, I got you. It's like, I'm glad that we clarified this. Like this for makes me, Sharp's explanation helped me too. You know, like
chewing,
I get it now.
The perfect example of chewing up the scenery, which I want to talk about some changes that might be coming to the show soon. I would like to kind of start focusing again on things, like have something to talk about each episode. And we could do movies, we could do songs, shows, whatever. You know, between show, but each show be different. Anyway,
the beatings will continue until morale improves.
That's right. But the most perfect example of chewing up the scenery for me is Pacino in The Devil's Advocate. That is like the biggest chewing.
Like
up
when
the
he's
scene.
Screaming, "He's an absentee landlord."
That's right. He's an absentee landlord. I love you. Like he's doing. I'm a fan of man. He's just
I'm
like
never judged.
His eyes are huge. He's just veins popping
spitting
out.
Spitting nonstop when he's talking. Yes.
There's no reason he necessarily has to be screaming.
Yeah. I gotcha. Okay.
That's
true. Gotcha.
Up the scenery. But I mean, I get it why they're saying that about Conor McGregor. He comes in a scene and he's just like, I'm going to dominate this scene. I don't really care if it's good. I'm just going to yell everything. Because as I watched him, I thought, this dialogue's not horrible, but I think they thought he was going to come in and play it under. You know what I mean? Not yelling everything. If he played it under, it wouldn't have been horrible. As a director, I would have been like, all right, can you take it down? Just say it as if it's you're just throwing it off. Throwing
you're
out.
Here.
You don't care.
I need you here.
Like you, yeah. You barely care about this. Like you don't even care if this guy hears you reply. That's how little you care about what you're saying. You're just mumbling. Like I would have taken it down somehow. But anyway, tried to anyway. But yeah, let's get into. We don't have much time now. We only have. I don't know.
Yeah, and
just a few
by
minutes.
The way, the second episode of Northern Exposure we watch is I am so ready to talk about. But anyway, I loved them both. But anyway,
okay,
go ahead.
Let's. Hey, before that, maybe we could just save that for the next episode. Something weird happened to me yesterday. I'm a little bit of
aliens.
I'm a little bit of a sneakerhead, and. I generally go out the house with some nice sneakers.
They got 12 steps for that, man.
Normally
you go out of the house with some fresh gear that's popping.
That's right. I'm dripping. I got my chains on. I got my rings. I got that drip happening.
All rizzed up.
Got my shades rizzed up. I got fresh kicks on. And that's usually my thing, you know. Now, on occasion, I'll throw on some crappy kicks if I don't really care who I'm hanging out with necessarily. If they're just friends or whatever, they don't care about my kicks. Now, for going and feeding the chickens and just going outside to take the dogs out, I have a pair of Crocs that I wear.
Okay.
They're just a pair of blue Crocs. I bet I've had them for, no lie, 10 years. They're in the same
shape. Cowboys don't wear Crocs.
They're literally my outside, like, flip those
you
on.
You need to get you some of those
out.
Croc truck nuts.
They I have like those, the, you know. I like the little gadget things, yeah. Anyway, I had to do a run of errands yesterday, and I was in such a hurry getting out of the house, I slipped on my Crocs without thinking. And then as I was getting to the place I was going in town, I realized I had my Crocs on. And I had such a panic that I was trying to figure out ways I could hide my Crocs. At one point,
were you wearing pajama pants or jeans?
What was I wearing? I don't remember what I was wearing. I think I was wearing.
If you're
like,
wearing jeans, it's kind of okay.
Some black.
No, it's not. I don't remember. It's not. Don't.
Well, it's better than the stars and moons PJ pants he's got.
Well, no, I wasn't wearing those. I had some track pants on. I'm pretty sure. So like now I'm there. And I go into panic mode.
Gangster.
I go into panic mode. I instantly start to panic.
Crocs, Tone.
We've got the Crocs.
These things, they last for years, Tone. I got these things on. I really start to panic. Like, I genuinely start to panic. I'm like, I can't go in anywhere with these GD Crocs on. They look, oh my
Where
God,
are you going
I think
into?
I'm a mental patient. At one point, I actually consider.
No, they just think you're from Southern Illinois.
No, I actually consider, like, just take them off and go in your socks. Your socks look better than your Crocs. I'm known for my socks. I got nice socks. I don't say too much. You know, I don't like the socks to do the talking for me. I don't like my pants to do the talking for me. But my Crocs would do some talking for me. I thought my socks are probably better. And that's literally how panicked I was in my brain. I was like, oh, I'm so embarrassed from these Crocs.
And this is why the three of us are so close, because we all have neuroses like this.
Oh, sure.
Out of nowhere. And the whole time I'm going, I've never had it over Crocs, but I've had it over every other thing. I've been there, dude.
That's the whole reason I don't own a pair. Is this fear right here?
I pulled my pants down a little bit, like old school the style, and like try to cover them with my bottoms. Oh God, it was horrible. I knew I was laughing at the time. I was like, "This is panic thought, Joe. There's no way you can walk in there in your socks and it'd be better than wearing."
Joe, did you start thinking I'm going to run into a bunch of people I know?
I did.
For the first
I was
time
like,
ever.
I'm going to be like the girl I had a crush on in fifth grade. I'm going to be in here and be like, "How are you doing?" I'm like, "Oh."
That's how you're doing.
You got Crocs and you've ripped off the side ribbons and the strap because it was too annoying.
You don't need the four-wheel drive every now and then?
Oh man, we got 10 minutes. Let's talk about episode 1, season 3, Northern Exposure, The Bumpy Road.
You know, we could talk about that, or we could talk about the new upcoming Bob Dylan pick.
Oh yeah, Chalamet.
And save Northern, you know. I don't know, it's up to you. It doesn't matter, make me any difference.
I thought we could maybe talk about the first one. It's a strange one. Not strange, I still liked it. But all I know about Chalamet is the pictures we've seen, which look cool. But that one picture, the one of like him actually with the hair and stuff, I hadn't seen that one. I'd seen the one of him with like the little, a little train conductor looking hat and the scarf. You know, he looked like super young, just coming to Greenwich Village. Is that how you say it? I've never known. I've only read it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Greenwich. I guess that's Greenwich, how it, but I don't Greenwich. Know.
Greenwich,
yeah.
Okay. But yeah.
That's how they say it in England, I think, but, you know, not the same place, obviously.
But yeah, we have Northern. So this is weird. Get this. This season also airs in 1991. That means they had a summer season. And they were like, they got greenlit for season 2, and they just steamrolled right into season 3 that aired in the fall, because this aired in September. The first two seasons, you remember, they were like, oh, you only get 8 episodes, and they're going to be
right.
Summer replacement episodes. So anyway, they're on to season 3, and it's packed now. And we're at Rick's Memorial, which
town meeting.
Yeah, town meeting.
Absolutely.
For Rick's memorial, to which they're supposed to have some silence, and Maggie uses the time to berate Flashman because she knows that he thinks it looks like a hood ornament.
Right.
To which
he's
like,
how'd she know?
Joanne shows up, and we find out that Rick had another lady in another town, which goes from there. Barbara is back. Maurice has Barbara back. And man, how much did you love these scenes of Maurice where he's just like happy and in love? And he's like,
she's behind him, showing him how to stop the recoil on the.
Yeah, and I was like, is this what gun nuts do? Is this like they're making out? He shows her his browning. It's really weird. It's also really funny.
Speaking of Maurice, I'm jumping. It may be the end of the.
Some people
so many Cold War
Maurice.
References.
Sorry.
So much Cold War reference humor. I mean, there's a writer on that staff who obviously has an undergraduate degree in history.
Who's obsessed with it. I think you're right.
You know, and especially, because, I mean, it's like every episode. I thought there was like some, you know, like theme or some thread. But there, mm-hmm. it's just reference humor just for baby boomers is all it is. Yeah. But it's like.
He writes, he's writing what he knows.
But yeah. But, so the, but the humor's like Yalta and like late 40s, early, like really early Cold War stuff. It's like, how is that relevant? You know what I mean? I guess mm-hmm. it was.
Like, yeah,
but
I don't
see,
know.
Here's the thing is, I don't know a single boomer, and of course this doesn't say much, but I'm just saying, I don't know a single boomer who watched this show. But Gen X people are coming out of the woodwork to talk about how much they love this show.
Yes, I've been
so
seeing
it. So I'm trying to figure that out. Like, because you're right, it. Shark. You're right. I don't get it.
I mean, the demo had to be the same as like 30-something and Twin Peaks and that sort of stuff. So it wasn't, you know, we were kids back then.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, of course, I guess then know. Again, there's Xers who are 10 years older than us, too. So, you know, I forget about
That's
those
true.
Old farts.
Right.
Yeah. Adam is back. Adam and his wife Eve, who's crazy as a loon.
Jesus Christ.
They kidnap Fleischman, which is a pretty troubling scene, really.
It is.
it had misery written all over it.
Yeah, I wonder how you felt watching it for the first time. Are you like, for real?
Yeah, for real?
And you know, Joel seems to pretty much take it in stride.
Yeah, he does. Well, yeah, for Joel, he does. Like, he realizes he's not going to be able to get out the way he normally does, so he ends up kind of taking control of the situation eventually. I was going to say, when this show started, Adore Me Amore by Color Me Bad was the number one song, and the number one movie was Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare.
Ew.
All right, yeah, we got Eve. She's a hypochondriac. She knocks him out. They keep him there. Joel wakes up in chains. Now we got Maurice breaking the law. And, of course, there's a
breaking
Trump
the
reference.
Law. Breaking what? The law.
Which is like the second or third Trump reference in this show.
Yeah, well, that one was dead on.
Yeah, about how he cheats the IRS. Which I was like, hey, Maurice, timely as ever. Let's see here. Oh, I really enjoyed the. Maurice breaks the law. Barbara breaks up with him because she lives and breathes the law. I really like the scene with Chris, and he's got a longbow, a natural longbow, and Maurice has a compound bow. And they're out shooting arrows. I really enjoyed archery myself. So, and you see Chris, and he's got this, you know, total Chris Zen approach to archery. He's talking about how
I was waiting for the famous line from Zen Buddhism, fundamentally the archer aims at himself.
That's what
like, I
was
waiting
that's
for.
Right.
Yeah, though that's where he got, right? Because he's you become one with the target. So
I mean, like, that's like a very famous Buddhist line.
Yeah, he's like paraphrasing it. He's circling all around it, but he doesn't quite get to it, and he you know, he tells him, you know, it works with the ladies too.
Yes.
In the next episode we're gonna see that in action there. But anyway, we get a dream with Maggie, and she's talking with Rick at the country club. She's in a nightgown.
At the Grosse Pointe Country Club.
Grosse Pointe Country Club. What did you think of that table set deck they had on the table? It was blowing my mind, and I guess it's because it was a dream. I don't know if you noticed it. It was.
What was on it?
There was the biggest cornucopia you'd ever seen. And then there was just countless bottles of different liquid and countless glasses of different styles all around this cornucopia.
Okay.
It was
so for me, I just know that Grosse Pointe is one of the wealthiest places in the United States, period.
Uh-huh.
So I just assumed we were just getting a shot of opulence, but that's too diverse to be so straightforward.
Yeah, well, that's where she grew up. Like, she is, that's where she comes from. Like, you know, that's why she is the rough, the pilot, the bush pilot, I think. Then we get this great story. Maggie, of course, she finds out
that
gotta
be a better way to say that.
That bush pilot. Maggie finds out that Rick had countless.
He was Wilt Chamberlain.
He was Wilt Chamberlain of the sky. Yes, he really was a bush pilot.
Callback. Nice.
He's getting it done. We find out that, and then so she's just horribly depressed. She's mad at all the men. She's mean to poor Ed. Ed never did anything to anybody. She's being a real jerk. But then we get Ruth Ann tells this great story. about how she cheated on her husband during the war.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, Maggie, of course, is going to think, is thinking like, oh, yeah, let me guess, he cheated on you. And she's like, no, I was the one that did it. And she's like, I loved him. Like, he was the best guy I ever knew, but I thought I needed this other guy during the war, blah, blah, blah. I just thought it was just a really well done little story, something I didn't expect to see. but yeah, that's there's not a whole lot else to go on. I love that you get a whole bunch of Adam talking about where he's been offered jobs. He's a yacht racer. He could have been a head chef in some famous Paris restaurant.
He
designed sails for the yacht. I wish I would have wrote it down. At one point, he says, keeping up with the ups and downs of revolving chefs.
Yeah.
So I'm like he's like a top, you know, Bobby Flay-esque chef.
You're right.
I love that. Oh, go ahead.
How old do we say we think Maurice is in this in this show?
I think he's like mid to late 50s to 60.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So the reason I ask is because, and I think I've been pretty clear about this, I like Maurice a lot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Even in spite of himself. But I was sitting there watching him, you know, with the scamming his taxes and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, this is the epitome of, like, the wealthy mentality in America.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything's law and order. Everything needs to be done by the book. Everything, you need to follow the rules, except me.
Except me.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I'm a good guy. So I can, if I can stretch, find me a loophole, I'm a good guy and I deserve that. Anybody else that breaks a law,
and by the way,
that law is horrible and you should never break it.
Absolutely. Right. And by the way, I'm not going to, when I come to win your heart back because I finally understand it, I'm not going to pay my taxes.
I'm gonna buy you off, personally.
Which I love. She says, "Which you get to deduct." I loved it.
Yeah. As much as I dislike Barbara, I did like that part where she kind of put him in his place.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
He's being such a literally like 20,000. How about 30,000? How much will it take? Like, she's just gonna be like,
for me to buy your love.
Well, if you give me 50,000, I guess maybe that'll do. Come on, man. Hey, we're out of time for the radio show. Thank you so much for listening, WDBX. A little word from our sponsors coming up next. We'll go for a few more minutes on the podcast. We got some big podcast news coming. Look us up in podcast land if you want to hear the rest or any other shows. It's 20IN21, finding the greatest 20 things in the 21st century. We'll be back. Thanks for listening. We're out of here, motherfuckers. You son of a bitches on the radio.
Put a little clap so I can find sandwiches.
Put a little clap. What's that? Oh, yeah, that's some fucking sandwiches. Man, what was up with his accent? He, like, came and went with
his
fucking accent.
It was, like, Irish, but not Irish. It was this, but not that. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I couldn't tell. And my wife was so put off by him, but not in a way that you would want to be put off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She was like, he's a leprechaun.
Right, right.
Like, he looks like a leprechaun. Why does he walk like he needs to take a shit all the time? Like, he looks like he's constipated.
Seeing people like do TikToks of this, and one of the best ones is there's a middle-aged woman like Harry's, and she's walking through her house like that, and then finally she like jumps up on the counter and she's like perched with her legs spread, but she's got her arms still like that.
Dude.
It's just like, and it's exactly like nothing is said, and that's the point. Is like, this is how ridiculous it is. Like, for no reason, this is what we're gonna do.
Oh, it's bad. It's like a, which is weird. He's a freaking fighter. Now I don't know. I'm not been into UFC for years and years and years and years and years. But he was like one of the best UFC had there for quite a while.
He was the face of it for a while.
Yeah. So I know he knows how to intimidate somebody, but the way he walks around is kind of like the way a kid, like a scrawny kid in school, would walk to try to make himself look bigger. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Right.
Like, I'm going to puff my arms out and maybe people will think
It's the arm.
Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It made no sense. Yeah. And by the way, I've just been rewatching Peaky Blinders. Trust me, this relates. And I've noticed that, you know, none of the Peaky Blinders guys, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the show, none of them are big dudes. But they're complete thug, gangster,
Get back into it and finish it. I started it.
So whenever they come walking through Birmingham, The costume people are great. Alabama? Because not only how authentic, they have their suits tailored so much that it makes them kind of force their arms out to make them look a little bigger while not looking stupid. Do you know what I mean? Like, I noticed it. And Roadhouse really made me think of this when I'm like, so they took Cillian Murphy, who weighs like 120 pounds soaking wet, and with the suit and everything, make him look like he's 180 pounds. And Conor McGregor looks like he's... I'm waiting for cartoon music to start.
Yeah, right.
You know,
who's
like
after me, Lucky Charms?
Or something should have started.
Yeah. Oh, man. It was something else.
what was I saw a meme the other day? It was like some guy in a boardroom at General Mills. It's like, so we're going to make this cereal that's, you know, wheat-based and it's sweet and it's got a bunch of marshmallows in it. And rabbits can just fuck right off.
Ah, what you taking? I'm here to take shit on you. Ah, shit, where's me gold? You know people want to do the where's me gold. Ah, I just think he would talk like a English, like almost English, and then he would like American English, whatever you call that.
And then there's sometimes it got so mush mouth I felt like he was Scottish.
Yeah,
like, well, that's like, I don't like, even know what you're saying.
He would be like, "Hey, what are you guys thinking about?" What? Why was the first half of that sentence sound one way and the second half sound another way? Now, of course,
do you know what I think happened? I have a theory.
Uh oh.
I think that Conor McGregor, someone told him, you know, you really got to sell this. You got to get into it.
Uh-oh.
Watch Johnny Depp in Pirates of the Caribbean movies. And I think this was his version of Johnny Depp. Like, I'm going to go for it. Instead, it came off as like, he's fucking Popeye the Sailor Man.
Well, I thought... I thought you were going to say somebody told him to, like, really go for it. To watch like an Al Pacino performance.
Oh,
like
that would Scarface. Be over his head. That would be over his head. Like, you can't do that.
Maybe it's just got Al.
Or maybe he did, and all he took from it was just be really fucking loud.
Be really loud. That's what I'm saying. He was like, oh, this guy's just loud.
I need a sandwich over here.
Gyllenhaal. You got a great ass!
I didn't
ass.
Understand why they had him running around half the movie with a golf club. If you're that fucking big, why? You know what I mean?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. The first time we see him really in action, he's got a golf club. I was thinking, why does he need a golf club? Can't he just, like, beat the hell out of people?
Hey, right, everybody. Right. Looks like you're having a smashing good time.
I mean, it's like, you know, our villain turned into John Daly all of a sudden.
Dalton!
I was just waiting for him to stand there at that golf club and be like, I'm here for hitting someone. It's terrible. Oh, my God.
I'm sure it was in there. They had to cut it out. All right. What are we doing here? Maurice, Barbara leaves him. We see Tony, often referenced Tony, at Barbara's house. I put a note down here about how Flashman just looks like crap.
Maurice is in no way phased that she just banged another dude like a day later.
Right? No.
He's in no way phased at all.
Doesn't seem to be at all. I think,
no.
Is that Maurice keeping it all together or is that something else completely that we're missing there? I don't know. That's in the dream. I was going to say, is Rick's number of 2,500 ladies, the Wilt Chamberlain of the air, is that real or is that in a dream? That's the dream problem we have.
Right. Like, is this her worst nightmare coming true?
Yeah, yeah, they often give us this information and then we have to remind ourselves, oh, wait, that was a dream. So I don't think that information is necessarily true. However, Barbara is back unexplained. The last time we saw her being friendly with Maurice was in a dream. And he says at one point, you never found my radio, but you stole my heart. All right, let's get into episode 2 if you want to. We can hit it quick. I don't know how much time you guys got. We can end it.
Yeah, I got time. Sure.
Next time. I have time, but I don't, you know, we don't have to spend that much time on it. But I got a little extra.
Well, I want to explore the
extra
question
time
of why there's not enough women to go around. that Maurice and Holly have to fight over one. But on the other hand, there's enough to go around that Chris could have like a, you know, like a exactly. a festival going on outside of his Airstream.
Where did all these
they
women
all come from? Right.
Yes. My wife and I kept saying,
"We can't find a chick, but there's like thousands falling
everywhere."
Like the extras in this episode alone had the cost of $1 million because they just had people we've never seen before.
It's so many. They're twins at one point.
It's like they went down to the Hawaiian Tropic contest and they're like, "All right, all you ladies, hop on this bus here. We got $50 a piece."
Yeah. So episode two, if you haven't seen it, is called Only You. And it starts with Chris and Joel. They're walking down the street. They're having a conversation about food. And every woman that walks by Chris is like flirting with him. And
it's just like walking through town with Shark.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just everybody.
It's usually people crossing the street. Or, you know,
every like, woman is Tiffany.
I'm more like walking down
Tiffany,
the street with
right.
Conor McGregor.
Tiffany Turner, I believe, is her name. They're wanting mustache rides. They're just coming by wanting kisses. They're like, is that shirt for real? They actually know. They're taking the time to learn about the Spinal Tap shirt. They're like, we appreciate your Spinal Tap shirt.
Nobody does. I'm fearful for the future, boys. I'm fearful for the future.
They're like, have you gotten a
I mean, even in the Spinal Tap group, nobody likes their stuff. There's only 10 people in it.
No. It's true. It's really sad. But
and
yes,
they only post
Chris,
the, they post
ladies.
The same joke, you know, like once a week. This goes to 11. It's like, you know, that movie was full of lots of good jokes.
There's like 80
yeah, for
minutes
real.
Of just great
nothing,
lines,
nothing
dude.
But jokes.
It's one guy. That's all he knows from the movie. Like, I guess, you know, I was thinking about watching it again, but I lost my copy of it, and I remember that 11 joke. Let's do that one again.
Hey,
is there something
forget,
about like
I
a girl
with
a
about the
dog
episode.
Leather or something? Do what?
I wanted to say one thing about this episode. This was hands down for me the best episode of the show.
Really? Okay. Did you just have a lot of fun with it, or was it?
No, it was written just, perfectly with an extended metaphor on sight. Everything was about sight. Maggie's okay. glasses. Mm-hmm. What, you know, women are attracted to him. They can't see it, but they smell it. He can't see why this one woman's into him. And she's an eye doctor. I mean, it was just all over the place.
Huh.
And it was threaded so nicely.
I did
that
not
it was
put
just
that together.
One total extended metaphor on sight, and I loved it.
What did, was it this episode or the last one? Chris has something about he recites a Shakespeare sonnet. And he
oh,
says,
he throws out the line, as Willie said. It's at the end of the episode,
that's what
I think.
I thought, yeah. I thought this was a different episode for a moment, and I was waiting for him to give this speech about watercolor paintings.
Okay.
And he did not give it, so I was a little like, oh, wait, this is a different episode I'm thinking of. All right, well, I'm glad you had a lot of fun with this one. He's, yeah, every woman in town is just, and where do they all come from? Oh, hey, babe, why, I am almost positive, not quite, but the blonde that is at his house is Susan from Susan Costanza. Is she not? I'm not joking.
No, I believe you.
I think it was.
No, I totally believe you.
When there's the two women and he's having performance problems because he's in love with the eye doctor. yeah, what's the other reference he had I was going to ask you about? Reading Sindac or something, I think he was talking about at some point.
Oh yeah,
I don't know.
I cannot remember what that line was, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what was going on there. We get a reference that Chris was in St. Louis when this happened once, but he references
right.
as if he was in Illinois because he says, "Well, that's basically in Illinois anyway."
Yeah. I was wondering
so
if I missed something right before
I,
that.
Yeah, so I was waiting for him to make a joke about. You know, St. Louis and Chicago are the same thing. That's what I was waiting for, some kind of joke like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
no,
I didn't quite get that. I didn't get the reference because he said this happened once and went bad once in St. Louis. Or he said, how far does this go? And he says, I don't know. It happened once in St. Louis, but that's practically in Illinois anyway.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if that was just a quick little, like, Chris lived in Illinois for a while.
Right.
Was it
right
here
or what
somewhere?
That?
Because St. Louis, you know, it's not that far from us. I think Chris spent some time driving his Harley Hog around, which Barbara ticketed in the last episode. Like a real ACAB moment there. We got Ed, one of the greatest lines.
Speaking of motorcycles.
Yes. Ever, Ed.
Back to Roadhouse, don't put your villains on crotch rockets. Put your villains on Harleys.
That's right.
There you go.
I did note that myself. Yes, what does... Joel says something like, have you ever seen this before? Like women just throwing themselves at a man with this much charisma? And Ed says, James Bond. Women like that right. with him. And Fleischman says... No, Ed, that's a movie. Try reality. And Ed says, no thanks.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought that was brilliant.
I was like, that is the greatest line Ed has said yet. A simple two words, no thanks. No reality for me. I'll stick to my movies and music. Pretty great. Oh, my God. This is also the episode where Holly takes a picture of Maurice. Also, sight. You're right, Rob. Sight.
And by the way, let me double down on it. We have to get their dream from three different scene perspectives.
You're right.
Like, the flashback. Not the dream, the flashback. The flashback. Of what happened that day in the bar. Yep. It's from three different scene perspectives. I'm telling you, it was all about sight.
You're right. It's a little Roshimon happening there.
Wait a minute. Say that again.
Roshimon?
Okay, I don't know what that is, but I was just looking up stuff on this episode, and that's one of the first things people cite, is that Roshimon's a famous in that scene.
Oh, okay, Roshimon's a famous Japanese play and book, and it's also a great movie by Akira Kurosawa. Roshimon is about... Actually, that movie, The Last Duel, is a take on the Roshimon. It is a rape... It is a trial and a rape, and it's from three different people's point of view.
Yeah, and they also say there was an American version of it called The Outrage.
Okay.
But they immediately did your version first when they were talking about this. Well done, Joe, pulling out that kind of reference. Nice work.
Uh-huh. Well, that's pretty...
Because when I read that, I was like, what does that mean? And I kept moving on, and then you straight up said it. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's just a retelling of story from three different point of views. It's called a Roshimon. And
I see why you're saying the duel's like that. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's the bad guy, the wife's, the husband, and then the wife. Like, it's all three of them, and they're all wildly different stories from their point of view. That's how Holland stole. And you're right, when Maurice is telling the story, Holland looks like a greasy, just weirdo. He's all like, his hair's all greased back. He's kind of hunched up, like kissing Shelly's hand all grossly. Fucking got his tongue out.
Yeah, it's like you almost see him like licking his palm and slicking down his hair.
Yes,
yes,
absolutely. He steals the bottle away from Maurice. He's not even looking at Maurice. He looks like a lizard getting ready to fuck Shelly sideways. Hey, Maurice, have you seen my new collection of top shelf booze? Meanwhile, he's like, come back here, Shelly, darling. He's Roadhouse. Holly's Roadhouse, and it was Shelly back in the storage room.
Roadhouse.
You're going to be my normal every Saturday night thing, baby.
Oh, no.
I want to see that movie. I don't want to sound like a real perv here or anything. But if I could get an R-rated version of Northern.
This episode had that some more Cold War stuff. I'm looking through the script.
Right.
It's you called that Truman a faint-hearted old auntie because that's he wouldn't make Patton go marching into Moscow.
I was
right. Right.
Well, what about the Middle East now? That's a Maurice yells.
Eastern Europe, yeah. But Eastern, it, yeah, yeah, what's 45 Eastern Europe, reference. Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I love that Maurice comes in the bar and he is just hot. I have written down. He is so hot. He comes steaming in there. And also, when he comes into Fleischman's and he says, how can you be sleeping, Fleischman? He's so mad that Fleischman betrayed him by talking to Holling. And I was like, you know, when you're scorned like that, I get it. Like, even the slightest, like, what?
Sure.
I thought you were my friend, and they're talking to that piece of crap that, you know, that betrayed me. So I kind of felt bad for Maurice. I was like, I kind of get it. Like, he feels he's not. He's totally wrong because his version of the story is not true. I like what they make up by the end of it. And then we get this scene. The Ramones are playing. We're at Chris's trailer. And it looks like a festival's happening outside his trailer. There's at least 75 women screaming bloody murder to try to get into his silver bullet trailer.
If I can
trailer.
Make it to the tree line, I'll be okay.
That's right.
You're right. That's a great line.
Oh, man. Oh, so fun. Flashman's just obsessed with of trying to figure out what the heck is going on with Chris.
Right.
How this is happening. He's wanting the science behind it. And then what happens eventually to Chris is the eye doctor is not attracted to him, and it totally blows it for him. And he can't perform. Susan Costanza is outside his trailer. She's like, oh, it's okay. They talk at the same time, those two ladies, which made me, it was a weird thing that they talked simultaneously. I don't know if you noticed that. In this episode, did your guys' episode have a weird, darkened, like the hood was down on the camera? At the top of the
screen.
At the top
of the, remember that.
At the top of the screen, did you have a little darkness, like just a little band of darkness? Because my episode did, and it was driving me absolutely insane. And everything else looks fine on my television. I kept it. By one point, I turned it off to be like, is my television going bad? It was literally like a, on a camera, there's a little hood on the top. And very often that hood will be in a shot, but that shot will be cut in a little bit so you don't see the hood. Does that make sense? You're just pushing in on that shot. So the light from that hood, it's basically a little bit brown shadow that it creates. It's not in focus.
Brown shadow. It's not going to taste so good, girl.
It's not in focus because it's right next to the lens. So it just comes off as a little blur at the top of the screen. If sometimes your hood is too low, your barn door, they call it sometimes. Anyway, mine was there.
And open, hoss.
And I thought, was this like one of those scan and pan, like it was supposed to be pushed in before broadcast? And this is right. The cut that didn't get it? I don't know. I was very concerned. I was like, if this continues, it might upset me. I love the scene with Chris and Maurice. They are depressed. They are in the radio station.
Yep.
And they're both going on and on about their unrequited love. And they think, you know, Chris is talking about the eye doctor. Maurice is talking about Shelley. They're both just so torn apart. It's raining. They're playing sad music on the radio. But Maurice, of course, ends it with, I bet he's got her. What I wrote it down because I didn't understand it. I bet he's got Shelley moaning on the bun warmer right now. What does that mean? Moaning on the bun warmer. What's a bun warmer?
It's got to be with the restaurant, right? Warm up the buns.
Oh, like he's like, well, he's roadhousing it then. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, the bun warmer would just be moaning against the bun warmer. Oh, my God. You figured it out. I was like, is she an old lady? She has to have a heating pad in her.
I think he's banging her on something in the kitchen.
He sits there.
A bun warmer.
I didn't put that together. I was thinking of buns like, you know, a butt, because that was a big term in the 90s for buns.
Like big bottoms.
That's right. Big buns, bottoms. Baby. We find out everybody in Chris's family has done time. I think that was a nice little tidbit of information.
Yeah.
I have Susan Costanza, great big hair. I would like to find out if that was really her. We got Maggie wearing makeup. And then we get the final part of the story. Shelley, it wasn't Maurice or Holling that opened the medicine bottle that gave her the aspirin. It was Chef Dave the cook, opened the bottle, which is weird that they all had the different story. So how did Holling end up stealing it? I don't know. Like, that's still up in the air. We never really find out. We don't have a town meeting, but we do have a townhouse scene with Shelley, Maurice, and Holling. Which I like that she brought him to the townhouse to talk to each other. And this great line here that I wrote down here, I absolutely love this. He's first of all, Maurice said earlier in the movie script, earlier in the show, I bet you're laughing at me, huh? I bet you're just holding your sides, bursting with laughter at me in that picture. And he says at one point, here we go. I go down the street, people say, there goes Minifield, the cuckold.
Yeah, that's right.
He's a beta cuck.
That's right. Oh, man. Let's see here. I think that's about it here. I have, Chris is not going to get the lady. He keeps going back and keeps going back. To no avail. She is just not interested. Did you think? So there's a scene where she's like, you know, he tells her and he's like, oh, okay. And he walks off. Did you think, not having seen it, did you think he was going to rush back into the screen and go over there and kiss her? Did that cross your mind?
I didn't think he was going to take no for an answer, but I didn't think he'd go like that bad.
Okay. I thought, like, I was getting worried for a second. I was like, oh, ooh, uh-oh.
Don't do it. 90s,
I could see him just rushing across and kissing her. She'd be like, oh, well, I was wrong, you studly man. Your kiss has proved my will to be stupid and not needed at all. Let's fuck. Come on, Daddy Long Legs. Let's stretch. I smell you now. Now that you took off your pants, you fucking gross motherfucker. You bathe in a lake.
Yeah, and I love how it just ends. It just ends. You know, like ends. Early.
Yeah.
And Fleischman's so upset because he thought he had more time to figure it out. And it's like, dude, you already figured it out. It's pheromones. Move on.
Yeah. Right, right.
I love that even Marilyn,
wasn't pheromones like a thing, though, back then, like with the bees? Wasn't that something we were just kind of learning about? Or like it was part of the pop culture at the time?
No, we were, because I'll tell you, and you can even ask Koppel about this. In the late 90s, when he and I were living together in Carbondale, and I had a subscription to Rolling Stone magazine, there was this ad in the back that was this cologne that had pheromones in it, and it was supposed to make women want you.
I remember seeing those. Yeah.
And
so this is kind of like the sleep apnea thing, right? Where they're on the cutting edge of some scientific thing, you know?
So he and I were walking through Famous one time when the mall still existed and had stores. You know, we parked there and we're walking in, and they had it at the men's cologne section, and a bottle of it was like $300 or $400.
Ooh.
And we were just laughing.
Ooh, Jesus, back then, that's like 10 grand now.
Crazy. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And I mean, like, and all I can think of now is Paul Rudd and Ron Burgundy. You know, they've done studies.
Yes.
60% of the time it works every time. But yeah, that's the whole, I was saying that the whole time. Like, this must have been like a cutting edge thing at the moment that we were starting to understand.
Yeah, I think so. Right. There's also a movie called Phenomenon with a very, very young Jennifer O'Connelly, where she can control the bees in the insects, and it has to do with the pheromones. So yeah, I think you're right. It was just kind of in the air.
That's right.
In the air. It's a Dario Argento movie, one of my favorite directors.
Who's, I
went for like a weird mainstream-ish movie. Not like most of his other movies. Very watchable, though. I recommend it. I have here that, we already talked about it. I have about Maurice's patent argument with Holling. the five goodbye notes. Whoa, what was that about? I have written down five goodbye notes. Oh, Chris said they left this morning. There were five goodbye notes taped to the mirror. So we're to believe that there were five women in the trailer.
Right.
Since there were five goodbye notes on the mirror. we have the great ending of Chris's speech about unrequited love. Then he gives the Shakespeare quote. He says something
from
about
Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah.
A sonnet. It's from the play.
Oh, okay. What is it again? He says, old Billy said it best.
Oh, crap.
Here,
I just had it up.
And I don't remember what it is exactly, but it's very nice, wrap up to the show. There's some great music playing as Chris goes outside and sits down on the sidewalk and watches the optometrist drive out of town It's just got a great, great northern vibe. It's one of those perfect northern episodes to me.
I thought it was one of the best done one, period. Like, the writing, everything was, like, so on point.
So now we're to the point in the show where we have to say, does this belong, does Northern Exposure still belong in the 20 greatest things?
Hey, I got your quote for you.
Oh, let me hear it, yes.
Love looks not with the eyes, but with the mind. See, we're talking about seeing again.
Yeah.
And therefore is winged Cupid painted blind.
Wow. Billy Shakes doing it again.
Billy Shakes!
Doing it once again through old Chris in the Morning. Great episode, great ending. Is it one of the greatest?
It's called Shakespeare, Tone. Words rhyme.
That's right, Tone. You ever heard about this guy? He had a racket going. He had men dressed up as women. You believe that?
Total fucking hooas.
That's where they get the word for it, Tone. It's what they call them on stage, the hooas.
All right, I'm not going down this rabbit hole with you, because we'll do it for 20 minutes.
No, we don't have the time. But yes, we hope some changes come into the show very soon that I want to talk about when we get off air here. But some fun stuff, I hope. But yes, is this one of the greatest 20 of the greatest things in the 21st century? Northern Exposure, yes, still. Roadhouse. Roadhouse, starring Conor McGregor and Jake Gyllenhaal. Is it one of the greatest 20 of the greatest things of the 21st century?
No.
None more black.
No. Thank you, Robbie. But yeah, no.
I'm going to say yes. All right. We'll see you next time, everybody.
What?